We're going to start off with a public hearing on Senate Bill 740A engrossed, which has been assigned to us, and I'll ask counsel to give us a summary on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to Senate Bill 740A, I would first mention that the summary I'm about to give probably won't touch on all of the points because this bill really does have to do with a variety of conditions and requirements regarding the laws on sex offenders. Very briefly, the main highlights of this bill are that it does allow citizens to discover the names of sex offenders living in their community, not only from law enforcement, but also from the Internet. And it also includes some additional crimes in the classifications of sex crimes, such as kidnapping in the first degree if the victim is under 18, and kidnapping in the second degree, except where that would occur by a parent. And there was no sort of a sexual offense involved in that. It also extends the sex offender reporting requirements to sex offenders convicted in other jurisdictions but who attend school or work in this state. It also requires the state police to verify the address of predatory sex offenders no longer on parole or post-prison supervision every 90 days. There are some other requirements. I know that we have some witnesses here I've been contacted by, and I would certainly welcome any elaboration on this bill from them.
All right. First witness we'll call up is Kent Swicker from the Oregon State Police. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, do you have a chart?
Right there is fine. I think everybody can see it.
Good morning, Chair Mannix, committee members. For the record, my name is Kent Zwicker. I'm a sergeant with the Oregon State Police Criminal Investigation Services Division, and I'm the supervisor of our sex offender registration program. Over the last several months, we've been working with our criminal justice partners to update our sex offender registration system and then also bring us into compliance with the federal Jacob Wetterling Crimes Against Children Act. The collective effort to bring 740 to you today has involved representatives of the Oregon Youth Authority, Department of Corrections, Psychiatric Security Review Board, Chiefs of Police, State Sheriff's Association, Post-Prison Supervision, Community Corrections, the Sex Offender Network, and the Juvenile Directors Association. Failing to comply with this federal Jacob Wetterling Act would result in a loss of 10% for a Byrne formula grant funding, which is about $1.3 million a biennium. Regardless of the Byrne grant issue, we believe this is good public policy that provides our citizens with the public safety services that they want and helps provide for a more coordinated response by our criminal justice agencies. Attached to the testimony is some basic requirements of this federal mandate that you can go through, which will be covered as we go through the brief presentation here. It has to do with some of the offense coverages, the requirements regarding the release of information, and our participation in the National Sex Offender Registry. Throughout Senate Bill 740, juvenile offenders who are adjudicated in juvenile court are not specifically required to register under the federal mandate. However, the juveniles are included throughout the bill, and this was done to be consistent with the legislative action in 1995 that required adjudicated juveniles to register. Then the legislature confirmed that position in 97, requiring that adjudicated youth who move into Oregon also register. So I'll go through the bill briefly with you now and go over the key points of the bill. First off, Senate Bill 740 creates a central repository for sex offender registration records. Currently, these records are entered into our law enforcement data system with several different agencies retaining these registration records. A central repository creates a single source access point for these records, and it's is useful as an investigative resource and for obtaining a single source for obtaining the documents that are necessary for criminal prosecution of offenders who violate the registration laws. This bill also provides a tool for law enforcement to assist supervising agencies by establishing new criminal penalties for supervised sex offenders who fail to comply with the registration requirements. Also within the bill is a provision that permits us, it's authorizing language for us to permit to share information with the, through the national crime system, through the national sex offender registration system. A large piece of this, of Senate Bill 740, surrounds the release of the information, of sex offender information, to the public. Under current law, for a person to learn if an offender is a registered sex offender, convicted sex offender, they would have to contact the appropriate supervising agency, whether that be the Oregon Youth Authority, County Juvenile Department, Community Corrections. Some information is available through the Wright County, going through the District Attorney's Office. But either way, it's not readily available. If a person wants to learn about a person who's no longer under supervision, that would require for them to obtain the criminal history of the person, which is a $15 fee, typically takes about 2 weeks to get, and the offender is notified that the person is making the inquiry before the person actually receives that record.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
That's available to any citizen?
Chair, Representative Sinceri, yes, if I understand your question correctly, a citizen may make that inquiry. Under Senate Bill 740, all of the relevant information regarding registered sex offenders is available to the public. Our citizens have very serious concerns about sex offenders, and they have been requesting time and time again to have access to this information. In anticipation of that, and this increased large interest in having this information, we have included in Senate Bill 740 a provision that permits us to make this available by electronic means, being through an internet website. And we have recently secured some federal grant monies to design, and we're partway through this design process, to design an internet access system so the public can make inquiries and do different searches based on location and name through an internet site. And if I can, I'll show on the chart a little bit how the system will work.
Might help a little bit.
You know, if I'm blocking you, the big blue box in the middle is reflecting this new central repository system. This would be housed within the Department of State Police. The information from all the different registration records, from our out-of-state law enforcement partners, from our federal partners, and everything within state, this information is going into the central repository. From there, this large collected database, we're working on a phase of this implementation of the system involves full access to our law enforcement partners, and that would be encrypted access to all this, all the information that's contained in those records. And also, an uplink would occur on these sex offender registration records to the National Sex Offender Registry. These boxes on the right, bottom right of the chart are the public access piece of it. So on the two boxes right here are showing what the supervised offenders. So supervised offenders, and then these are non-supervised offenders. For the supervised offenders, what the public can access for the adults is the name, description, photo, date of birth, city, zip code, and the contact name and telephone number of the supervising person. The parole officer, probation officer. And for supervised youth, that would include the name, year of birth, city, zip code, and contact name and number, again, of the person supervising him. For supervised offenders, that search is capable by name only. Otherwise, they would still be contacting the supervising agency. For offenders who are no longer under supervision, essentially the similar information is available: name, description, photo, date of birth, address, city, zip, and crime, and these could be searched by the public through criteria searches. This is the internet piece of it. In addition to the internet piece, Senate Bill 740 permits any law enforcement agency to make this information available if somebody walks in. It's not necessarily name specific, but to go through the internet site for these offenders, it would be a name specific search.
Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Sergeant Swicker, when the offender is notified that under current law that someone's making an inquiry, is the offender notified, as to who made the request?
Chair Pazansky, Representative Gianella, that's my understanding, yes. I've not actually real up to speed on that entire protocol, but it's my understanding that they are, in fact, notified of who made the request, when the request was made, and that they'll be provided with the information. I'll firm that up for sure and get back to you if I'm incorrect on that. Another provision of Senate Bill 740 includes a lifetime registration for most offenders. Under current law, registered sex offenders are required to register, it says for life, but they may petition the court after 10 years for relief from this requirement. That's changing under the federal mandates in that how it's crafted in Senate Bill 740 is only persons who are convicted of a C felony offense or lower may petition the court after 10 years. Otherwise, that petition provision is eliminated. It also requires that non-resident students and workers register. Currently, only Oregon residents are required to register in Oregon. Under Senate Bill 740, persons who work in the state or attend school in the state would also be required to register. Predatory sexually violent dangerous offender address verification. If an offender is predatory or a sexually violent dangerous offender, which relates to House Bill 2327, then either the supervising agency or law enforcement will verify the addresses of those offenders every 90 days. There's a new it's a violation provision in 740 for if an offender fails to sign and return an address verification form.
Sergeant, before we get too far away from one of your last points, was that under 740, we will be making a change as to who can petition for release from the registration. Is that required under the federal guidelines, and we're just coming into compliance with that as a Class C felony or less, or is that just something that we've decided to, as a policy decision for the state of Oregon?
Chair, may I, Representative Brzezinski, that was under the federal guidelines are not geared in alignment very well with Oregon's statute. That's a really close fit to what was in the federal mandate. If Pam Wood from the Department of Justice is here, not to present, but to help with some of those technical questions, if you'd like, we can cross-reference that to the federal mandate.
It sounds like we are trying to comply with what the feds are requiring.
Chair Mannix, Representative Posansky, Pamela Wood from the Department of Justice. Yes, we did add that the Department of Justice did determine that it would be necessary to add that modification in order to be in compliance with the federal law, which is just coming into effect. There were timelines to comply, and some of those are now expiring, so we aren't looking toward the near future for a time period in which that requirement must be met, and that is a lifetime requirement, lifetime registration requirement under federal law. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, go ahead. Continuing, current law requires registration for most sex-related criminal statutes and burglary if committed with intent to commit a sex crime. Senate Bill 740 adds a few new offenses, and this is to comply with a federal mandate. Those offenses are kidnap first degree if of a person under 18, kidnap second degree of a person under 18 except by a parent, contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor, sexual misconduct if the offender is 18 years of age or older, and possession of materials depicting sexually explicit conduct of a child first degree. What we dealt with, was changed on this in the Senate committee. There were some concerns over the registration for the contributing to sexual delinquency of a minor and sexual misconduct. However, those were required for the federal mandate. So what's also included in Senate Bill 740 are provisions that include contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor, which is typically a person 18 years of age or older involved in consensual sexual activity with a person under the age of 18. What's included in this bill is a provision that brings the contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor into the ages of defense, which adds a 3-year ages as a defense. So if the two actors are within 3 years apart, the offender's over 18, then it's no longer a criminal offense. A similar provision was included for sexual misconduct, which involves sexual conduct with a person who's under 18 years of age. It doesn't specify that the offender has to be over 18, but could be. And that essentially is in alignment with the 3-year defense. It's worded a little bit differently, but it's a 3-year defense if the victim is 15, 16, or 17 years old, which makes that consistent with a contributing sexual delinquency of a minor.
Sergeant, I'm not sure if you're going to follow through. I've I was alerted to one of the things you've already said, which is about the kidnapping in the second degree of the victims under 18 years of age, except by a parent. And I guess I understand from my discussions with someone that was involved on the Senate side that that is not required under the federal, but we've decided out of convenience and reporting that that is something we were going to include and kind of just do a broad stroke. Is that correct?
One of the categories of offenses that are required is kidnapping of a minor, except by a parent. My recollection is that
yes.
We're getting an answer to another one.
Oh, sorry. You might want to go ahead with that. If you like, I can come back with that.
All right, let's let you be looking while Representative Bowman asks the question.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First question is, what does kidnapping have to do with sex crimes?
Chairman, Representative Bowman, it doesn't necessarily. What the federal mandate was trying to get to was sexual offenses and crimes against children. And so the kidnapping was included as crimes against children.
I may follow up, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I was involved in another conversation. You may have answered this. And is it just kidnapping of someone under 18 and with the exclusion if they're the parent, or is it all kidnapping that's covered by Senate Bill 740?
Chairman, Representative Bowman, it's kidnapping one of a person under 18. That could be a parent, though that's a higher level provisions. We can go through the statute, but taking a person, I think it's involving them in, at risk, taking from the state, hiding the person, that could involve a parent. Kidnapping second degree would exclude if it was the kidnap was by the parent.
Mr. Chair?
Pause for a moment here. Would you make reference to the page of the bill that we're talking about, which amends the kidnapping statute, page 3?
Page 3, lines 7 through and then line 12.
Person Sinceri.
Oh, I do have another question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What if the kidnapper is 17? I mean, is there a distinguishing between the age of the person who committed the act and the individual? I mean, you're talking about 18 or under.
Chair Mannix, Representative Bowman, if I may, and this may address Representative Posansky's question too, while we're on the subject of kidnapping generally, let me give you some background. Kidnapping in the first degree involves compulsion and physical injury or terrorizing the victim, and those levels of conduct, the more egregious levels of conduct. The federal law requires that kidnapping of a minor be included in this. And my recollection is that kidnapping in the first degree was regarded as certainly well included within the intent of the federal intent. And so kidnapping of a minor by a person of any age, when it is kidnapping in the first degree involving physical injury, terrorizing the person, expecting a ransom, and that sort of thing, is included per se in the bill, and that is on line 7 of page 3. Kidnapping in the second degree, there was some discussion on the House side that sometimes this involves purely kind of custodial kinds of problems and so forth. I believe that's not usually what is charged in a parental custodial type of situation. There is custodial interference, but nevertheless, there was a great deal of concern about the lower level of kidnapping, which involves secretly confining the person, taking the person from one place to another, may involve less egregious types of conduct. However, because it is required to be included by the Wetterling and other federal acts, Megan's Law and so forth, it was decided that although it may not typically be the charge when there's custodial interference by a parent, at least it would be appropriate for kidnapping to exclude parents from that. It would not exclude a perpetrator who is not the parent, but who was 17, say, for example. There is no age defense in kidnapping like there is in the sex crimes.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask one more question, please. My understanding is that in the state of Oregon, you can be charged with kidnapping if I stood in front of Representative Sinceri and not let him move. I am inhibiting his ability to get, of course he may not let me, but I am inhibiting his ability to move at that time. And district attorneys can charge that as kidnapping, is my understanding what we do currently in the state of Oregon. Is that correct?
Representative Mannix, Representative Bowman, I'm not a prosecutor. I can think of perhaps occasions in which an action like that on a person's part might be viewed as that, but in the bill, as you will notice, for
May
either...
May I interrupt, please? Let's just talk about the statute. Kidnapping in the second degree, ORS 163225. A person commits the crime of kidnapping in the second degree if, with intent to interfere substantially with another person's personal liberty and without consent or legal authority, the person A takes the person from one place to another or secretly confines the person in a place where the person is not likely to be found. I don't think the description that was just given of preventing somebody from moving would constitute kidnapping. That's the lower degree of kidnapping. The higher degree of kidnapping includes that plus trying to compel ransom, holding the person as a shield or a hostage, causing physical injury to the victim, terrorizing the victim. So the short answer to Representative Bowman's question is no, that is not kidnapping.
I think that's right, Representative or Chairman Mannix. And I would note that the other point to make is that the inclusion of the crime in Senate Bill 740, of course, the victim must be a minor. So that would also not, it may relate to the general question, but not to this bill.
I've got questions stacked up like planes over JFK. Representative Sinceri will be coming next, and Representative
Dealing with the without authority, the 21-year-old boyfriend takes a 17-year-old girlfriend to California, doesn't have authority. We're talking about that scenario that will be covered by this?
Representative Mannix, Representative Sinceri, if it were deemed that the elements of kidnapping 2 were met in terms of the lack of consent to be taken to that place and so forth, yes, those ages certainly would put it within the ambit.
But even if she consents at 17, it's without authority, which is read in the statute. So even if they agreed together to go to California for a week, the parents could charge him with kidnapping, and that then would fall under 740?
Chair Mannix, Representative Sinceri, I do not see in kidnapping 2 a portion relating to that the person is unable to consent by reason of being under age 18.
Not under the reference.
Hang on.
I just read it. Okay.
The kidnapping definition?
Right, without authority. So
too.
The 17-year-old can't consent.
If with intent to interfere substantially with another person's personal liberty and without consent or legal authority. Parent usually has legal authority to.
Right, so the 17-year-old could not consent to go with her boyfriend to California, and
right. The
parents could charge them.
Mr. Chair, I think your example is correct, except for maybe the age. If you under the definitions, without consent means that taking or confinement of, is accomplished by force, threat, or deception, or in the case of a person under 17 years of age who is otherwise incapable to give consent, that taking or confinement is accomplished without the consent of the lawful custodian of the person. So maybe instead of the 17-year-old, and if I could just follow up on that, Mr.
Sure.
Chair, one of my concerns is that where you do have youth in a situation of forcibly moving someone from one room to another, and not allowing them out, that that in fact could be considered kidnapping in the second degree. And what I'm hearing, Mr. Chair, from the way the bill reads now, since that would not be a Class C felony or less, that individual would in fact for the rest of their life have to be registered. And I'm wondering, I'd like to have some discussion as we go forward as to some type of possible either removing that out, if it's not necessary, or if it is necessary, that we put in some type of age defense for this type of conduct of kids just being a bully and forcing someone in another room against their consent. And they're basically within that three-year age or something. I can't see the rationale of having that person then have to be registering for the rest of their lives for
right.
that type of
And that's my concern, Mr. Chair. I certainly agree with the intent. And we've got someone who is indeed an offender here. I agree with everything that's here. But there are some situations where I don't know that it's even prudent to have them registered and for the rest of their lives be considered an offender. So.
Would you like to address that, and Sergeant?
Well, I can. Chair Maddox, the federal law requires, as the first category of crimes that must be included as registrable crimes, kidnapping of a minor.
Here's what I'm thinking. It might be helpful to us, and again, I'm not sure if the attachments to your testimony get to this. Yes, they do. Page C, I guess it is, attachment C, lists what has to be covered. So that's helpful. What I would suggest that you might do for purposes of, we're not working this bill today anyway, but for purposes of letting us compare things is prepare a simple one-page comparison. Here's what the federal government, through the munificence of its funding, is now trying to impose on the states, usually for good reasons. I'm adding all these political commentaries.
The way around the Tenth Amendment.
And basically, here's what we have to do if we want not to have a 10% penalty applied to our burn grants. I think that's basically their mechanism. And he who pays the piper calls the tune. Okay. But a list of what the piper is calling, and then a list of how we intend to implement that. And I understand from your earlier testimony that we've broadened certain coverages to make our system work better, which is usually the Oregon way, and that's fine. But that way we'll have a better understanding of the linkages. And then also the committee members will want to spend some time reading the actual bill itself and your testimony to make sure we understand those pieces. So I'm going to ask you to proceed with sort of an overview and a policy discussion for a little few more minutes this morning. So we're up to speed and moving. Then I want to ask you a few questions about 2807 and 2808 to see whether or not we should simply sit on those or move some part of them or whatever. Did you have some further remarks to offer about the policy overview here?
Well, Mr. Chair, just like to comment on a couple other provisions of 740 that also included with that is a fee provision for the unsupervised offenders, which would be a $70 a year fee. That keeps this at a revenue neutral, and the that's also a part of our department budget. It just includes this package. There's also another provision of Senate Bill 740 that requires that law enforcement or supervising agency, if there's concerns regarding notifications made to the community that require agreements between agencies to resolve concerns over whether notifications are done or to the extent that they're done. So that essentially covers the overview of the bill. As written, this would comply with the federal Jacob Wetterling Act. It does update and re-engineers our registration system, and I believe it provides a greater service to our citizens. That's all I have for prepared testimony.
Mr. Chair, just one final question. On page 18, line 17, it talks about burglary. And is it the intent of 740 that people that are convicted of burglary also are lifetime registrants? Or is that a burglary where some kind of sexual offense takes place.
Chairman Manning, Interpreter Sinceri, I'm not sure where you're at on 18.
Page, 18, line 17, or burglary if committed with the intent to commit a crime listed in ORS 91.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sinceri, that was added, trying to remember, 93 or 95 legislative session. And that's a burglary if the underlying crime, the intent to commit a crime therein for a burglary, is a sex crime. And the purpose for that and the discussion that occurred around that time was, in some cases, a person's the crime that was intended to be committed was a sex offense, and in that they commit a burglary and plead to the burglary. So what they're convicted of is a burglary where the underlying crime, in fact, was sex crime.
I see. Well, this is new language, so it's new to this.
And if I may, Chair Mannix, Representative Sinceri, I'd refer you to page 3 of the bill, lines 16 and 17, burglary with intent to commit the listed sex offenses has been registrable for quite some time, and the purpose of needing the additional language on 18 was to incorporate burglary with intent to commit the new underlying sex offenses that were added at this time.
So that's why there's the bold face.
That's correct.
Sorry, just clarification there. So if a person commits burglary and a sex crime also takes place and they plead to the burglary, they still would be registered, still would have to agree to be registered even though they would only be convicted of burglary. They would be registered.
Chairman, okay. Representative, so that's correct.
Good idea.
All right, Representative Gianella is next.
Mr. Chairman, on page C.
This is the attachment C, okay.
Yes, yes. Under A, solicitation of a minor to engage in sexual conduct. Could you explain how that fits into this bill? Chair Mannix, Representative Gianella, that is also a category. As this list indicates, that's a category of crimes that were identified by Congress as being worthy of inclusion in the requirements. It involves inducements. Again, each state's offenses are not going to be necessarily the same and not necessarily going to be close fits.
Well, let's track on this. I think what Representative Gianella is getting at is we're not talking about the 17-year-old who is making sexual advances to the 16-year-old girlfriend. We're talking about an adult soliciting a minor who is, and there's at least a 3-year age differential in terms of how we apply it, right?
That's correct. That would be a solicitation to engage in prostitution. It would be a solicitation to engage in pornographic filmmaking, that type of crime.
It could also be a solicitation to engage in what we'll call regular sexual practices, but the person who is solicited is at least 3 years younger and is under 18, and the person who is doing the soliciting is over 18.
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, this line doesn't say prostitution. It says
No, the prostitution comes up a couple of lines later. That's why I started
talking. Does it have
to
be included under that?
No. This is just a descriptive listing. This is not a statutory piece. This listing right here just describes some general categories that the federal government says ought to be covered by the state law. Our state law is much more precise. So when we get into our statutes here, we are very precise about what this means. They're giving a general category.
And if I may, Chair Mannix, the categories overlap quite a bit, and there's catch-all categories, so there's some overlapping among these listed things under A.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you talk a little bit about how the public accesses this information? And I understand that there's a limited list that the public gets, and could you talk about what specific information they get and how that process will work?
Chair Mannix, Representative Bowman, and I'll refer to the chart that should be in your packet and also that's on the board. As it's set out in the bill, law enforcement will release this information upon request by the public. So if someone making, there's two scenarios. One scenario involves the electronic access to the information. The other scenario involves making an inquiry, whether that be by telephone or stopping at the local law enforcement
and requesting the information.
If I may stop you for just a second, Mr. Chair. So they can go to any law enforcement agency. They don't necessarily have to go to the state police to get that information.
Through Max Sergeant Boone, that's correct, yes.
And so there's a database that will connect all law enforcement agencies, or...
Yes, Chairman, Representative Bowman, what we're working on, and we're partway through the development phase of, is a, where we received some federal grant money for development of a system, would involve a linking with all our law enforcement agencies statewide, so they would have access to all that information.
Okay, I'm sorry, I cut you off. So you'll go back with the public process?
Okay. Chairman, Representative Bowman, the, as far as the going into and requesting the information or calling by telephone, the information that's listed on the chart and also in your packet would be, it's different depending on whether the offender is supervised, not supervised, whether they're a juvenile or not. For supervised adult offenders, that would include the name, description, photo, date of birth, city, zip code, and the contact name and number of their parole officer or supervising agency. For supervised youth offenders, that would include the name, year of birth, city, zip code, contact name, telephone number. Again, if they're no longer under supervision, an unsupervised offender, then that would include essentially the same information, name, description, photo, date of birth, address, city, zip code, and the crime of conviction. All that information would be accessible by calling or walking in. For when we talk to the other side of it, when we talk about the internet, like the electronic access where they're making inquiries from the personal computer, library, or whatnot, then the information regarding the supervised persons, supervised offenders, is a little more restrictive. It is a search by name only. So they would be entering in the name, and we're still working out the development of that, whether it's we use some sort of sound decks or close hit, or whether it has to be exactly true type search with exact name and characters. If it's a person who is no longer under supervision, then the search is by criteria. So conceivably, and we're still in the development phase, our intent, however, is to make that searchable by, for example, a specific address, by a specific name, or a person could enter, depending on community and what their needs are, a zip code, or a city name, or a street name.
If I may ask one more question, Mr. Chair, I guess my concern is I'd like to see what happens. I mean, say I'm a citizen and I'm about to buy a house, so I go to this database and say, you know, I want to see if there are any sex offenders living around me. All I can get is the city that they're living in and the zip code from any law enforcement agency. I mean, the name and all that, but if you don't know, then you don't know. But you get a city and you get a zip code. So how does the public know whether or not that person is actually in their neighborhood?
Chair Max, Representative Bowman, if you look in the one box for the non-supervised offenders, those that are no longer under supervision, the address would be available in that part.
Right.
And so you would be able to go in and make the inquiry for a particular street or zip code, for example. If they're no longer under supervision, it would have to be a name-specific search as far as the inquiry. That wouldn't prohibit you from going to local law enforcement, city, sheriff, state police, and requesting the information, or calling the local community corrections, juvenile department, or youth authority to find that information.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hansen.
Well, a couple of things maybe you could bring back next time. One, I see there's a $70 annual charge. What's the procedures? Are there procedures for waiving that for indigent people? What would be the process involved on that?
Chair Manning, Representative Hansen, as it is, that's not that fee is not tied into the registration. Excuse me. So a person would not be criminally charged with not registering if they neglected to pay the fee. It's in a sense, it's almost a voluntary fee, except that we're working with some of the provisions in current statute to, if they neglect to pay, to make that fee a debt, so that money would be owed to the state, but there wouldn't be any criminal penalties associated with failing to pay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would think that's still going to be somewhat of a problem, even if, because a lot of, I've got no problems in terms of collecting the fees, again, people that are working and functioning, but there's a group of these people who basically are on public assistance that there's no blood in that turnip, and building a significant debt. The other one is there any opt out when these people are, say, incapacitated in a nursing home at age 87, and they're still being required to fill out a form every 90 days. Is there any opt out in terms of when they're aged and incapacitated in a hospice, whatever?
Chairman Manish, Representative Hansen. No, there's no provisions to relief from that, other than if their order is vacated or reversed, if they petition for relief from their requirement, if they're eligible for that. We also, as a part of this, we discluded supervised offenders from the fee because of the same turnip example. They're already in a situation where they're paying for services and treatment and things like that. So this just involves the unsupervised offenders.
The other thing, and question I'd like to raise, and it, I think this is significantly more important than some of the detailed stuff. And that's, I'm concerned in terms of the abscondition rate. The more we increase, the more we tighten the screws down on reporting, and I'm concerned that there's the group of the most dangerous of these people will simply abscond. And I'm wondering if there's any way that we could have some data, start collecting some data, or have data to compare with the current system to find out, so that 5 years from now or 10 years from now we can see whether this is really working or whether this is driving another problem that's perhaps more serious.
Chairman, Representative Hansen, we do currently track our compliance rate, and so we'll be monitoring that through implementation to see what impact and effect that does have. As part of this too, it is becoming a national policy, and so as a part of the national policy, it involves an information network and exchange of information through law enforcement partners throughout the nation. And what the federal act called for was the single source central repository for each state. And so that narrows down, that helps with the communication of information as far as offenders who were unable to locate, who have not reported for registration, things like that.
I think in our earlier discussions on identity theft, we've seen how it is still relatively easy to completely change your identity, change your residence, change your name. And I wouldn't want to see this. I'm concerned that this system is going to end up driving that type of conduct. But worry about that at a later date.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. It's Assistant Attorney General Wood.
Yes, Pamela Wood.
And Sergeant Zwicker, we appreciate your coming this morning. Here's how I would like to proceed. First of all, this is just a little flashing yellow light in the distance. I never thought I'd be saying this, but I'm a little worried that at some point we may be getting into too heavy duty, a federal-driven system of tracking all citizens in the United States. Every session now I see is developing more and more networks and registries, and we may de facto over time develop a national identification and tracking system for anybody who ever stubbed his toe. Now, I realize we're talking about a specific serious topic here, which is sex offenders who prey on children. But even in trying to toss the net to catch all of those sex offenders who prey on children, we seem to have a net here that captures a few other sex offenders, and I have no sympathy for them in that sense. But then we hear that the net captures them for the rest of their lives, even when they're in the geriatric ward at age 87 or in the IV, under IV and everything else, in a hospital bed. And I'm just throwing out this signal that at some point, conservatives and liberals together are going to say, wait a minute, how far are we going?
you're going to see that as we look at this bill, we're going to want to make sure that we're targeting a specific group. Yes, we want to meet the federal requirements. If we find the federal requirements are too onerous, we may say we won't go there. I don't think we're going to find that here, but we're going to be careful about that. Over the next few days, I would welcome your checking with the individual members of this committee to discuss the elements of this bill. I would hope that some of our friends out there from law enforcement, the civil liberties community, prosecutors, defense attorneys, will also look at some of this language. I don't want to find out that we've gone ahead and tossed this gigantic net out there. The reason I mention this is we're all looking, we're discussing gun control, we're discussing firearms and the federal records keeping and the state records keeping. We've got a number of other registries out there. We're going after people and taking away their licenses for not paying their child support. Every single time, it's for a good motive and a good reason, but you start taking these pieces of this puzzle and start putting them together, and pretty soon there won't be any citizen out there who hasn't done something to cause them to be in some national network. Now, why do I say all that? I just want to sort of bring out the collective consciousness of some of the members of the committee as they've been pecking at this from certain perspectives. We need to be aware of that. So as we proceed, you'll see that we'll be pretty cautious about how we craft this. That's just my distant flashing yellow light. Representative Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, if I can add to your flashing yellow light, I think we've already seen that that net actually is going beyond even the sex offense types. With this kidnapping, as Representative Sincere and I both have acknowledged and looked at. And we're talking $1 million, I understand that, and that's something that would be great for the state. But at some point, we need to make certain that we're not going to just overbroad the national registry that's going to be lifetime required for it. I just cannot see. I know the situations where kids, in the heat of passion, force another kid in another room to beat the hell out of them, and that's not right. But is that up to the level that they have to be registered for the rest of their life? I don't think so at this point.
So just be aware of those flashing yellow lights. We want to be helpful here. And Sergeant, in particular, if you have the time to check with each of the representatives and see if you can visit with them and go through some of these provisions, and then identify some of the issues and questions, we'll be bringing that back. Then I'd ask you to do one other thing. We have two bills up, House bills, 2807 and 2808. And I don't know if you've had a chance, Ms. Wood or Sergeant Swicker, to look at the amendments to those bills. We wanted to hear your sort of overview so that as we looked at those two bills this morning, we made sure that what we're trying to do in these two other bills aren't contradictory or overlapping or whatever. Have you had a chance to look at those, or would you like some time this morning to look at those?
Chairman, I looked at them briefly. We just did get the amendments to 2808 yesterday and have kind of just some preliminary overview can give on that.
Then what we'll do is when we pull those up here for discussion, I'll invite you back up to talk about. Well, why don't we do this, in fact, while you're here. We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 740, and to get us rolling, we'll go into work session on House Bill 2807, and we do have our folders, which we have to pull up. This bill has been in front of us for some time. The -2 amendments are a proposed gut and stuff to 2807. And under the -2 amendments, we have some limited information here. I see a representative from Representative Lewis's office here. Would you like to come forward and discuss these amendments? And Assistant AG Wood can stay up there along with Sergeant Swicker. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and ladies and gentlemen of the jury. Well, you're going to pass judgment. I guess you are a jury of some. Well, in definitions of jury, I'm not sure. But before I start, I want to say something important.
Please identify yourself for the record. I'm not representing Neutral of Omaha today.
I'm Tom Bessonet with Representative Lewis. Representative Lewis is in the full Ways and Means Committee, so she is unable to be here. She would like to commend, however, the following people. Jeff Collier, Sergeant Kent here, Lieutenant Bob Sindstrom, Paul Snyder, and Paula Wood for cooperating extensively with us in drafting these amendments. Fact is, they drafted the amendments and we approved the amendments.
Let me cut to the chase here, then. These amendments that basically are process amendments now for the speed in which information is going to be entered into the system and the process itself in which that entry will occur. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
And Sergeant Zwicker, have you looked over these amendments?
Yes, I have. I do have, real quick, some testimony.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, while that's being passed out, I want to emphasize we're talking about predatory sex offenders only this time.
Chair Mannix, committee members, again, for the record, my name is Kent Zwicker with the Oregon State Police. There's two major components now. If we just look from a gut and stuff standpoint, we're just looking at the dash two.
Right.
There's two.
The testimony says, if I may, because we're short on time, we have session at 10. These amendments are okay. They fit in with what you're doing with Senate Bill 740. In fact, they fill in a gap that you had left in Senate Bill 740.
Exactly, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, there is one provision that Representative Lewis would like to see included in the bill, and that's on page 2, line 21.
Is this the amendments or the bill?
Yeah, the amendment, number 2 amendment. It says number... line 21, the state police may, upon request, may, she would like that may change to shall. And I know no objections to that.
What's the state police's position on that?
Chair Mannix, we do have some concern when we change things from may to shall and that some of the liability issues, staffing resources, system capabilities that we may be
I think
be
if we don't want this bill to go to Ways and Means, I think we better leave it at May. And there's also, there's this Pandora's box that's called shall.
It's up to the chair and the committee. Thank you very much.
We appreciate that idea being presented. Is there a motion to adopt the dash 2 amendments?
I so move, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bowman moves adoption of the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2807. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there objection? Seeing no objection, the dash 2 amendments are adopted to House Bill 2807. Representative Bowman, do you have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2807 as amended to the floor, Mr. Deacon.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Representative Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, I know that we want to move this out. I'm just concerned and want to make certain that we don't need to leave this one here while we complete some more work on SB 740 or 2808.
As I understand it, no. They will fit together, and this is something that... would be separate and apart, and even if 740 didn't proceed, this would stand independently as a process piece.
And
but if 740 does proceed, there's nothing contradictory in there right now unless we screw around with the process in 740. And if we do, we should be aware of 2807.
Okay. The only other thing is that regarding the relating clause of gender notification, if there's something else that we need to be maybe using that with or whatever.
And in fact, we probably wouldn't be given permission to spend any extra time dealing with it anyway.
Okay.
Good question, though. Further discussion? Any objection to the motion by Representative Bowman to send House Bill 2807 as amended with the dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Trains leaving the station? All right. No objection. The motion is carried. House Bill 2807 is sent to the floor with a due pass. We'll offer Representative Lewis first choice at being carrier, and if she is not wishing to carry it, then Representative Bowman will be the carrier. And Patsy, have you noted that? All right, we will move into, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2807, and while you're still here, we'll move into work session on House Bill 2808. Let's take a look at what we have there. Yes.
Just for, I guess, the committee, it looks like staff has put together a chart for us that's on the summary as to the different classifications and what's going to be under there, so that might be something we want to make a point of reference to.
Yes, and let's invite Mr. Bessonet back up if you'd like. No, you don't want to get entrapped in this one. I'm looking for the chart myself.
It was on the today's group of handouts. So.
That's why I didn't find it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, while you're looking for your copy, I did want to, I guess, broach the subject of this chronic neighborhood offenders. And see if we can maybe talk a little bit about.
Sure, let's do that. We've got this, and it looks like the dash three amendments are the most recent version. Let's talk about that. That's on the dash three.
Mm-hmm.
That's apparently. Well, let's see.
It's dash three's line starts on line five, page one is the definition of what a chronic neighborhood crime means. So we're identifying this list of offenses.
And I see Mr. Horton is not here. Mr. Horton is the one who told me that this had been worked up as designed to get after the most common predatory neighborhood crimes, that is, burglary, stealing cars, robbery, and drug dealing. That's all I can talk about. And then apparently there's the idea is that if there's a certain amount of repetition of those crimes, that that's to pull the person into the network. And what I may do, if Mr. Horton doesn't return anytime soon, is defer until we have him to explain the conversations we had with some people about that.
I would like to do that if we could, because I guess mine just glancing at the list earlier when I saw the amendments, the robbery, I guess that doesn't seem to be that much of a neighborhood crime, not that it doesn't happen in a neighborhood setting.
That's a good question. Well, let's do this. If do you folks mind just standing by, I'm going to recess this work session, and when Mr. Horton gets back, we'll inquire about that. I know he's had conversations with some folks about what will be appropriately covered here, and since he's the primary source of that information, we'll wait. So we'll recess the work session on House Bill 2808.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is there any chance of taking a quick break?
All right. This is a good time for a 5-minute break. We will recess the committee for 5 minutes.